So we'll continue our study of Sefer Shoftim, and we've gotten really to the last section of the Sefer. If you were going to divide the Sefer into different parts, Perek Yud Zayin through Chaf Aleph, the final five chapters are really two stories unto themselves. We even have debate when exactly, we'll review that debate, when exactly the stories took place. And the first story is entitled Pesel Micha, the idol of Micha, and we'll see how it develops. And as we mentioned last week, there is kind of this debate of when the story took place. There's the Seder Olam, which is a later source of Chazal, of keeping out dates of various things. According to Seder Olam, these stories actually happened at the very beginning of the Yemei HaShoftim, and that almost when we hear the Pasuk saying, and there's no king, it's not just saying, and overall there's no king, it's almost in the loss of Yoshua, if kind of Moshe had a semi-status of king, being the one ruler, and his successor was Yoshua, and we pointed out at the beginning of the Sefer, kind of the looming question we had, why Yoshua did not appoint a successor like Moshe did. So it's kind of without the days without the king referred to even the days already after Yoshua is not on the scene. And then obviously according to that approach, the major question is, well, why is it here? Why are you listing it at the end of the Sefer? And we pointed out that maybe it's to kind of make sure that we have a clear picture of the overwhelming majority of the time, there was peace and tranquility, they're the up and downs of the Shofet. But these stories, which speak to like kind of a breakdown within society, one on a religious level and one on a more, you'd say, almost interpersonal level, that we don't want necessarily to define the entire Sefer. The other thought is that they happen particularly when there's no active Shofet. And so we're now at a time where there's no active Shofet. And so it's being told to us there. The approach that it happened actually now also that definitely fits in within the text of why Shmuel HaNavi chooses to write these stories here. And it's almost in this vacuum of leadership between the time period of Shimshon and when we pick up, say, for Shmuel, and Eli is the Shofet, and Eli ruled for 40 years. So it's in between that time that these stories took place. And however you say it, you could definitely view these two stories as being background information to appreciate why Sefer Shmuel and why having a king was so necessary. Because as we definitely, we're going to concentrate now on Pesel Micha, but as we learn through Pesel Micha, you're almost scratching your head, like, why are we being told this story? There is some level of significance, but you would almost have to imagine that similar types of stories where Not everyone in Klal Yisrael is going to be aware of this story. It's dealing with one tribe, mainly, interacting with one family from a different tribe. And there's going to be a back and a forth, and we'll see it. But the biggest question you have to be asking yourself is, why are we being told this story? And that's something that we're not going to get it's not going to be a clear answer from the text. It's more for us to try to keep processing and appreciating how these are the final two stories of these days, ushering in the time period of Shmuel and finally crowning the real monarchy. So we'll begin
it's not religious at all, but in the time, the word king has a whole new dimension in our lives.
That's true. So we're getting a taste at what it's like not to have a king or any sort of functioning rulership. And that's really, it's going to be three or four times in these prakim, twice today, you're going to hear a pasuk that says, and there was no king, so everyone did what they wanted. And that, really we always want to have, even every week we say the tefillah for the government that we're in, so it really goes back to a Mishnah in Perkei Avos, where the Tana teaches us you should always be mispalel for the peace of the monarchy, of the government, whatever that government is, because if they're not successful, then everyone's going to take off each other's head. Meaning it's going to be anarchy. It's going to be everyone rules. So obviously you want to have the right government in play, one that's good for Klal Yisrael. But it's definitely something that we'll see. And those main themes in the story of Pesel Micha And then the story of the final story, which happens over the last three chapters, which is Pilegesh Begiva, really speak to what happens in that vacuum of leadership.
So can I ask you a question? Because you just referenced Eli. But
right.
He was the Kohen Gadol, right?
So Eli serves as Kohen Gadol and Shofet.
So at the but he, any Kohen Gadol as like a Shofet or
I'll just repeat the question so that they hear. Would any Kohen Gadol, it could be not. I mean, would a Kohen Gadol be looked at? Each Kohen Gadol served differently. There is the question of the role, and we'll maybe see this behind the scenes, specifically in the story of Pilegesh Begiva, but if we understand that Pinchas, who was Kohen Gadol, is kind of still around, and the question is, obviously, that has to be a little bit miraculous in terms of the length of time, but, you know, kind of where was he, where wasn't he? We've made reference to a few times in Shoftim, like an Ish Elokim, a Navi, and some of the Mepharshim say it was Pinchas. And then you're kind of scratching your head, like, where was he? You know, why is it more of an in and an out? And again, it's definitely not clear from the text. But Lav Dafka, not specifically, would a Kohen Gadol automatically be that individual? And Eli seems to be unique because, on the one, he's unique in many ways, but he's not included in Sefer Shoftim, which is probably a question that I don't have a good answer for. If he is indeed a Shofet, we maybe would understand why Shmuel is not in Sefer Shoftim, even though he's technically the last Shofet, because he's the one who crowns the king. So, and he has a book named after him. I'm not saying that's his reason, but meaning we understand Shmuel being the transitional figure. Question is why Eli is not included in Shoftim, and he seems to be the first Kohen / from the tribe of Levi, because the Shoftim that we've all had have been from other tribes. And so, you know, there's something. Eli, who's a Kohen. Well, he's a Kohen. He's a Kohen, so then he's from Levi. Which there actually is also, there's a little bit of a small theme, because we're about to see in this story of Pesel Micha, it is going to involve a Levi, and it involves Har Ephraim. The story of Pelagish Begiva, we're going to see those kind of biographical pieces of information. And then Sefer Shmuel opens with Elkanah, who's the father, husband of Chanah, father of Shmuel, who's a Levi and lives in Har Ephraim. And so there's some, you know, again, you can say it's a coincidence, but there's some, and so there are kind of two times it happens and doesn't work out so well, because these two stories are quite negative. In the Elkanah, Chanah, Shmuel story, that definitely works out well. That, you know, why it had to be exactly that makeup, these are definitely interesting questions. So we'll begin Parak Yud Zayin, Pasuk Aleph. In and of itself, it's a short parak. Vayihi ish mehar Ephraim. There was a man from Har Ephraim, Ushmo Michayahu. His name was Michayahu, and therefore Michayahu. We also refer to him as Micha, as we see many names in Tanakh. They're interchangeable. And many times we hear that introduction of Vayihi Ish, and then Ushmo, his name was, it's something that is positive. Micha, in totality, we're going to not really look at him as a positive figure. Chazal say maybe he had some positive qualities. He was into Hachnasas Orchim, and so he had some level of positive qualities. But very, very quickly, we see that he's not a man of that we want to look up to. Pasuk Beis, Vayomer Leimo, he says to his mother, Elef Umeya Hakesef Asher Lukach Lach. There are 1,100 pieces of silver, asher lukach lach, that had been taken from you. I mean, you were robbed, Mom. The at, Alisa, and you made a curse. The gam amart ba'aznai, and you even said this curse over in my ears. Hine hakesef iti ani lakachtev. Behold, the money is by me, I took it. I stole from you, Mom. Vatomer Imo, and his mother says to him, Baruch Bini Lahashem. Baruch, somehow referencing that the source of all blessing should be towards Bini, my son, Lahashem, towards Hashem. So it's almost, the whole thing is strange, right? we hear that there's a man from Har Ephraim. Usually that means he's an established man. You're imagining some type of an adult. And he begins a conversation with his mother and then tells his mother that he robbed her, that the money that was robbed, and she had put out some curse, the word Allah, like we have in the Torah itself, and Allah can be a curse. Allah Hazos, the Mitzvah Tzion tells us it means a curse. And she had said the curse over into his ears, which Rashi basically says he was nervous. He was nervous about the curse coming true. Stealing from his mother was not the problem. It was the fact that she put out some type of curse, and that he would he was afraid of the curse. He basically admits to his sin, and she says Baruch b'ni l'Hashem, which maybe you say it sounds nice that she's almost willing to forgive him. That's taken as a language of forgiveness, that the curse shouldn't be upon you because you admitted to what you did. And you know, if the story stopped there, so maybe we would think of him as being, you know, he's somewhat of a Baal Tshuva. He's trying to fix his ways. He's admitting to his sin. It may be out of motivation of fear from the curse. But we know mitoch shelo lishma bal lishma, maybe, and the fact that she accepts his tshuva is laudable. The 1,100 portions of silver. So the Radak and others point out that it matches up to the portions of silver that was used to buy off Delilah when she was trying to get the secrets out of Shimshon. And that there is even one theory that the woman is the same woman, but the Radak says that he doesn't think that that's true, and he just sees it being some level of a connection of two stories in the Tanakh, that where 1,100 talents of silver are involved, and it's a bad story. So we have it with Shimshon, it ends up being bad. Here it ends up being bad. Maybe that's why you put the stories together, if indeed this story happened chronologically somewhere else, but somehow it fits in thematically to when this amount of money is involved and it goes negative. So he returns the mother, he admits to his mother that he stole the money. And you know, when you kind of in your own mind, you're thinking, what type of person steals from their parent? And that, you know, it's an extremely obvious. I mean, the trait of stealing is negative, period. But stealing from one's parent, we definitely see a low moral standard going on with this micha. And that, you know, kind of like we're getting a window into. To a certain extent, you'd say this is just random family in Israel. That this is not necessarily, that we don't know who Micha is. We never know Har Ephraim, so we could assume what tribe he's from. We never know more about him other than this, you know, what's going to happen here. And it's almost like maybe this could have happened to anyone. And that this, it speaks to the state of the people. That here you have a person stealing from their parents. Pasuk Gimel. Vayashav es elef umeya hakesef le'ima. So he returns the money to his mother. Vatomer imo. But his mother says back to him, Hakdesh hikdashti es hakesef lahashem miyadi livni lasos pesel umasecha. She says to him, Hakdesh hikdashti. I've already sanctified this money, esakes of the silver, lahashem, to Hashem, miyadi from my hands, livni, for my son, meaning you, lasos pesel umasecha, to make a idol and a molten image, va'ata, and now ashivenu lach. So the mother says, I'm going to give the money back to you. And in this one pasuk, you walk away confused, because on the one hand she's saying that she dedicated the money, she consecrated the money la Hashem, and he uses yud kei vav kei, which is Hashem's name, it's definitely Hashem, but to make a pesel and a masecha, to make a molten image, which we know is code word for avodah zarah, and that what pesel micha ends up representing is a story about avodah zarah in the land, and that there are different stages of avodah zarah. The initial stage of avodah zarah is when it's still somewhat confusing and relates to Hashem himself, right? That's how That's how the Rambam tells us Avodah Zarah started at the beginning of the world, right? Adam was created. There was no Avodah Zarah. Everyone believed in Hashem. Already in the time of Enosh, they started using certain ideas of an intermediary between man and God. You need the sun, you need the moon, you need Hashem's kind of officers. And eventually you forget it. You get to the days of Noach and they forget that Hashem's in the picture as well. And the same thing happens, right? We learned in Sefer Malachim when Yeravim ben Nevat started when he didn't want people going to Beis HaMikdash, he starts his own kind of temple and he lets people bring karbanos. And originally it sounds like it's worshiping Hashem just off the beaten path, and soon the Hashem piece falls by the side and it's just Avodah Zarah. That could be what's happening here. It's an era where there is clearly a drive for Avodah Zarah, but it's mixed in with some level of Hashem. And that any time that this exists, it's already Avodah Zarah. Meaning once you make a Pesel, once you make a Masecha, it's already Avodah Zarah. It's still in that confused, maybe middle state where you're still mentioning and referencing Hashem, and you think this is the appropriate way to serve Hashem. And what we could appreciate is it speaks to the time, it speaks to the spiritual state of the people if they think this is where it's at, right? If they were constantly visiting the Mishkan in Shiloh, and they're constantly coming in contact with the classic way of serving Hashem, so then you would never think that this is how you should do it. It must speak to some detachment from the Mesorah, from the normal tradition. And so this woman who had lost her money, it's almost like Lahavdol, someone, right, someone loses something and they say, you know what, if I find it, I'm going to give tzedakah. If I find it, I'm going to do this good deed. She already said, basically she's saying, Hakdei Shikdashti, this is something I did already. I knew this money was stolen from me. I didn't think you stole it, but I knew the money was stolen from me, and I had already resolved that if I get it back, I'm going to give it all to God to make an idol. And now I'm giving it back to you in order to take care of that. Pasuk Dalid, Vayashav HaKesef L'Imam. But Micha pushes back, Vayashav HaKesef L'Imam. He returns the money to his mother, which initially may have been his effort to, right? He's a ganav, but he's a, you know, they say stories about like in Europe about stories. They involve Moshele the Ganef. I don't know. I've heard that, even though my father's name is that first name. But Moshele the Ganef, which it means that, you know, Judaism is perfect and Jews are not. There are stories where Jews were thieves. It happens. This guy was a thief, but he returns the money to his mother because perhaps he's a religious thief. He's a frum thief. He doesn't want to worship Avodah Zarah just yet or be involved in such a thing. So he returns the money to his mother. But he's going to have a quick turnaround and come to the darkness. Not, you know, I guess in his mother's eyes, come to the light. Vatikachimo, so his mother takes it, the money. Masayim Kesef, she takes initially 200 pieces of silver. But it's Nehu Latsoref. She gives it to a silversmith, to someone who works with silver, right? Soref, it means to kind of, you melt down the metal and you get rid of the impurities. Vayaseu Pesel Umasecha, she turned it into this carved image, a molten image. Vayi Beveis Michaya. And she brought it back to the house. So it was located in the house of Micha. So he originally doesn't want it, but now it's there. Pasuk Hey. Va'ish Micha lo beis Elokim. All of a sudden, we hear that in this house of Micha is a beis Elohim. It's a Avodah Zarah. His house became a temple. So he bought, there's a huge shift, which again, we don't always have every word, every line being told to us. There's a huge shift because now he's all in. Vayas ephod, he makes an ephod. An ephod is a you know, the type of a similar apron that the Kohen Gadol wore. It's a religious item. An ephod is not something only that a Kohen Gadol would wear, but an ephod is like a religious type of garment. Usrafim, he makes trafim. Trafim, we have mentioned, trafim, the Mefarshim say it here, You remember the Truffim from the time of Lavan by Rachel, when Rachel takes the Truffim. You remember Truffim also from in Sefer Shmuel when David needs to be on the run. So his wife, Michal, takes Truffim and puts it in the bed so that David can escape out the window. When the guards come in, it buys a few more seconds because Truffim have they're like a shape of a person. And through magic, through a, you know, voodoo type of worship, they can sometimes make, at least there's a belief that they can make these human, you know, lifeless figures come alive. So this is what Micha's doing. He's set up a whole temple. He makes the ephod, he has Serafim. But what else, and you need someone to serve. Vayimale yad achad mibanav, he chose, he literally filled the hand. It means to raise, to give a promotion to one of his own sons. Vayilo lechohen, and it was a priest, because every temple needs a priest. So very quickly, from one pasuk to the next, Micha has bought in, and he basically made a lahavdil. He made an avodah zarah temple. He in his house, and he's got everything. He's got all the accoutrements, everything that you need, and he even has a priest. And then we're told almost a narrative, right? So that's, you know, Shmuel Anavi, when he writes the sefer, is recording for us. By Yom Mahim, in those days, ain melech b'Yisrael. There was no king in Israel. Ish hayashar b'inav yaseh. Everyone did what they want. To the extent that if you want to make a house of avodah zarah, you can make a house of avodah zarah. No one's keeping you in check. And the limud is that had there been a king, right? Had there been a king, there would have been, and had the king been a righteous king, there would have been a road for these things not to happen. It wouldn't be ish hayashar b'inav yaseh. And therefore, to one of two things would happen. Either if someone did such a thing like this, it would be dealt with. Or maybe there would be such a kind of a certain healthy sense of fear of doing the wrong that you wouldn't even engage in doing it in the first place. Right? The reason, there are two reasons why you don't speed on the highway. Right? Number one is because it's not safe. But then there are some people, like, you know, let's say they're on the Palisades. There's only one reason why they don't go above 55 miles an hour. They know the Palisades is full of cops, and they know they're going to get pulled over. So there's a fear. So sometimes you do something because it's the right thing. So maybe having a king would have taught people to do right for doing right. But maybe having a king, it would be like, I have an itch to do something wrong, but I hold back because I'm afraid of the king. And that. So everyone does what they want, including Micha. And, you know, had the story ended there, It would accomplish, I think, a lot, because again, we'd be given this window of a spiritual breakdown, how a mother and son in Israel could just totally involve themselves in avodah zarah and without any consequences. And this kind of speaks to the spiritual state of the people. The story goes on, and kind of, I think, by going on, it just adds more layers to that. To this the success of this house of avodah zarah and the fact that people are interested in it. And again, it's not happening in a pure vacuum of spirituality. This is definitely at some time in the Yimei HaShoftim. The only debate we have, is it at the beginning or is it the end? But once you start the Shoftim, right, you already during the time of Yehoshua, the Mishkan is set up in Shiloh and it stays there for 369 years. So as long as this is any time, any of the stories really are taking place in Sefer Shoftim, but now highlighting this, there is a place to worship Hashem, a central place to bring karbanos, to come in contact with religion in the proper way, is available for those who want it. Pasuk Zion. Vayhi nar mi beis lechem Yehuda, mi mishpachas Yehuda. There was a nar, a young boy. He's from beis lechem Yehuda. There were two beis lechem. So, but the Navi wants us to know it's beis lechem Yehuda. Mi mishpachas Yehuda. He's from the family of Yehuda. V'hu Levi, but he's a Levi. V'hu Garsham. He lived there. So what is it? Is he from Yehuda or is he from? Or he's from Levi. So everyone has an opinion. And that either he was a pure Levite. He was a pure Levite, but he is not a proper Levite, and he acted in the ways of some of the negative influences in Jewish history from the tribes of Yehuda. Or maybe he was from the family of Yehuda on his father's side, and that he's a but he's a Levi from his mother's side, or he's or the opposite, and he's a real, right. So either he's a full Levi, he's maybe a mixed blood, but he's coming from Beis Lechem, and there are going to be sources that say he's not just any Levi, but he had real yichus. He was a prominent Levi. He lived there. But in Pasuk Ches, we're quickly told that he leaves. Vayelecha ish mihair. And the man left the city. Which is interesting because he just grew up. Vayi nar. In Pasuk Zayin, he was a nar. Now all of a sudden, he's an ish. Vayelecha ish mihair. Mi beis lechem Yehuda. Lagur ba'asher yimtza. He leaves Beis Lechem Yehuda, lagur ba'asher yimtza, to dwell where he will find. It's almost like he's exploring. Vayavo Har Ephraim, he comes to Har Ephraim, ad Beis Micha, he comes to the house of Micha, la'asos darko, to kind of make his way. And maybe the house of Micha was known to be a house that guests could stop at, maybe that's why Chazal mentioned one of the positive traits of Micha was that he was a place, you know, somehow people on the road knew that they could stop there.
So where is Har Ephraim? In which area? I don't see Har Ephraim.
Where is that? Somewhere in the land of Ephraim. The land of Ephraim, which is next to Yehuda. The land of Ephraim is next to Yehuda, and as we'll see, Dun is also right near there. And those are going to be the three locations that are kind of interplaying in the story is Yehuda and Ephraim, and then we'll get to Dun. So it sounds like we're being told random information that there's a boy, a lad, an ish. It sounds like he doesn't fit in. He lives in Beis Lechem Yehuda, but he doesn't fit in, and he's wandering. He wants to find a place to live, which maybe you'd say in and of itself seems innocent, but I think we could also argue that it also speaks to the spiritual state. We have to imagine that that's not necessarily so common back then, that people kind of have their place to live, and for you to wander off on your own, right? Because everyone lives based on their own tribes. If he is a Levi, the Levium had specific places to live. For him to wander off on his own, I would make the argument that it's not within the norm of the times. And the fact that he's doing it is maybe telling us, again, kind of the spiritual state of that era, that you know, you could have just people wandering around, like almost looking for, you would say maybe looking for trouble, looking for something, looking for meaning, and therefore they could either find good or they could find bad. And in this case, he ends up finding bad. Pasuk Tes. Vayomer lo Micha, Micha says to this Levi, Me'ayin tavo, from where do you come? Vayomer lo, Vayomer elav, he says back to him, Levi anochi, I'm a Levi. Mi Beis Lechem Yehuda, and I come from Beis Lechem Yehuda. Va'onichi anochi holech, I'm going. Lagur basher emtza. I'm going wherever I find. Now all of a sudden, Micha starts doing the math. The wheels start turning in his mind, and he knows, as we'll see in the next pasuk, he knows, and we saw before, he had everything set up at this base of Avodah Zarah. He's got the idol. He has the right clothing. He has the right, you know, accompaniment, and he has a kohen. But his kohen is his son. What about a Levi? A Levi working in his temple, this will be a chash of a temple. And again, the Mefarshim, we'll have a hint to it a little later on, but the Mefarshim explained that the yichas of this boy was that his yichas went back to Moshe Rabbeinu. He wasn't just any Levi, but he was a grandson of Moshe Rabbeinu. And so he had real yichas. And even though, you know, only the Kohanim were the ones who are the main servers in the Beis HaMikdash, but second best is a Levi, right? He couldn't get his hands on a Kohen, but all of a sudden this impressionable mind, this young kid, comes to him saying, you know, I'm looking, basically looking where to live. Pasuk Yud. Vayomer lo Micha. So Micha says to him, Shiva imadi, stay with me. V'ye li la'av u'lechohen. You will be for me, for a father, and for a priest. Va'anochi eten lecha aseres kesef le'yamim. I will give you 10 portions of silver, le'yamim, that's always the Tanakh's way of saying per year, as the Metzudos Tzion reminds us, but the word yamim in the Torah means year, so that's why the phrase yamim yamima means annually. The erech begadim, and a set of clothing, Metzudos Tzion says erech is like an order, like a uniform, umichyasecha, and your sustenance, your livelihood. Vayelech Halevi, so the Levi went with it, meaning that it's almost like the money is for savings. It's this is a nice package because he's giving him clothing, he's giving him livelihood, and the money. So usually you use your money for your clothing and for your for your livelihood. Lahavdol, I think the president of the United States gets a salary. A certain salary. And so, but the salary is really, it's really above and beyond because he doesn't use that salary to buy the food, meaning the food is provided. It's, and most of our presidents don't need that money anyway, because this sounds like a great package. And specifically to someone who has nothing. He has nothing. And he's a Levi living in the agricultural time. Where he doesn't have his own land, he doesn't have a place to farm. He's looking for something, and this is offered to him, on a silver platter. And even the Mefarshim point out that Micha is even speaking to his ego a little bit by saying V'yeli la'av u'lochohin. You'll be for me a father. A father? What does that have to do with anything? It's almost like he's flattering him, saying I'm this established person. I have this house. I have this whole setup. I'm going to be looking to you for to be almost like above me, even though Micha is not in terms of this, Micha is not in the chesed business. He's doing this selfishly so that his temple will be more chashuv, and he'll turn him into a kohen, which again, maybe you would say it speaks a little bit I'm not a Levi or a Kohen, so I can't speak to it. But it could be a certain aspect of a Levi always wants more. Right? The unfortunate nature of people is not to be satisfied with what they have and want more. All of a sudden, he gets to become a Kohen, not a real Kohen, but a Kohen in terms of stature. And whether or not the Levi at this point is religiously corrupt, he's definitely corrupt enough that he's willing to take it. Because even if he doesn't believe in the Avodah Zarah, the fact that he's willing to work in the house of Avodah Zarah says something about his character. Pasuk Yud Aleph. Vayoel Halevi Lasheves Asa'ish. Vayoel means, the Metzudos Tzion says, desire. So the Levi desired Lasheves Ha'ish, to live with the man, meaning to stay by Micha. Vayihi hanar lo ke'achan mibanav. And the lad became to him like one of his own sons. And now you're really scratching your head because we've changed his description back and forth. He was a nar, then he was an ish, and now he's back. And now he's back to being a nar, and that maybe what you say is when he starts out in Beis Lechem, he is an actual nar. When he makes the decision to leave, so he's making the decision of an ish. He's making the decision of an ish to kind of be independent. That's not what a nar necessarily does. And now that he's back in the house of Micha. So even though Micha said, you're going to be an Av to me, you'll be the Kohen, there isn't the clear adult in the house is Micha. Meaning Micha is the established one. And therefore, Vayihi Hanar Lo Ka'achan Mibanav, he becomes like one of his own sons because he's still young. We know that Micha had at least one, Micha had a few children, because it said when he chose one of his, it said Achad Mibanav to be the Kohen. So we don't know how many sons Michad, Mibanav, his son. So he had at least two. So this one is above. Now, we don't know what it means. You know, this would be like in 2022, all of us would be concerned, how does Micha's son feel? He just got replaced, right? How does he feel? It's not a Tanakh question. We don't hear about Micha's son ever again. But if anything, you would say it must mean that he was accepted, because the Nar, the Levi, is like one of the crew. Pasuk Yud Beis, Vayimale Micha as Yad HaLevi. He raised up the hand of the Levi. Vayhi lo hanar lechohen. Now this Nar is a Kohen. Vayhi beveis Micha, and he's in the house of Micha. Pasuk Yud Gimel, Vayomer Micha. And Micha says, Ata Yadati. Now I know. Ki yetiv Hashem li. That Hashem is being good to me. Ki haya li halevi lechohen. Because I have a Levi. Meaning he's viewing in his corrupt way of viewing the world, Micha actually sees Hashem here, which on the one hand you think is good that he's still seeing Hashem, but he sees it in such a corrupt way, which, you know, it happens to be, it speaks to maybe you would say a lesson that runs throughout all of history, that if a person wants to say what they're doing is happening under the you know, kind of blessing of God, they can. The way that they view the world, they're seeing this, that, oh, God must want this to happen. When the right way to view it always is that if it's happening according, if you're following according to the laws and dictates of the Torah, then it's going to be proper. Why Hashem is letting this happen now? You know, that's a question that might bother us. Like, why is Hashem letting this guy Micha? You know, he's leading a success story right now. He opened up this, you know, lahavdil, this shtibel for Avodah Zarah, and it's working. And now he's thinking it's all great. Now I even have a Kohen. You know, why does Hashem allow that to happen? You know, first of all, the answer is we don't know. That's A. B is we believe in Bechira. We believe in free choice, that Hashem lets Jews make, lets everyone, including Jews in Eretz Yisrael, living during a time where there is a Mishkan in Shiloh, he lets them make their bad decisions, and then they need to live with the repercussions. And the repercussions here are, you know, maybe not going to be known to us in terms of the text. Meaning, you know, Micha, you might say Micha is going to be dealt with, but most likely after we finish this story, none of us are going to think that Micha got exactly what he deserved, quote unquote, from our vantage point. But it's that he made his decision, and he's still, even though he's celebrating the fact that he got a proper priest, or at least a more proper priest for his house of Avodah Zarah, by saying, oh, Hashem must have given his stamp of approval. And then again we hear in what's called Pasuk Aleph, Bayam Mahem Ein Melech Yisrael. In those days there are no king. And it seems to be this pasuk is a transitional pasuk, because on the one hand it is a reference back to the story of Micha's establishing. On the other hand, it's viewed as part of the next episode. Uvayamim haheim. So we're in Perek Yud Ches Pasuk Aleph now. It happens to be, if you look at least in the Art Scroll Navi and some others, they incorporate Pasuk Aleph together with the end of Perek Yud Zayin. And so they're viewing this as still being kind of thematically, we want it to be together. And maybe it's, again, to bridge that kind of capstone Pasuk of, again, hearing there's no king. There's no king. It doesn't say there's no king and everyone does what they want. Instead, it says there's no king, and then we're introduced to a group of people who, in the end, are going to do what they want. So it's, in essence, saying the same thing. There are two ways to say it. You could say everyone does what they want, or you could actually show us a picture of what does it look like when everyone does what they want. And that's who we're introduced to. Uvayom Mahaman, in those days, Shevet Hadani, members of the tribe of Dan, Mevakish Lo Nachla Lashevis. They wanted a piece of inheritance to dwell. Kilo naflalo, For it hadn't fallen to it, to that, to him, to Dan, Arayomahu, until that time, Besoch Shiftei Yisrael, Benachla, among the tribes of Israel, as an inheritance. Now the Mefarshim point out, there's no way to understand this as Dan had no place to live. That the Yehoshua divided up the land, everyone got a place to live. The question is, they clearly need more space. Is it that they grew out of their space? Is it that among their lands, perhaps among their lands, right? We've been talking about throughout Sefer Shoftim, there were pockets that were not conquered. Pockets of native Canaanites that were allowed to stay. So it could be Dan had a problem of bad neighbors. Dan had a problem of not being able to use the very land that they got. And so they need different land. They need more land. Maybe you could read in that they just want more, right? Not being happy with what you have and wanting more, like Shlomo HaMelech writes, you know, the person who has 100 wants 200, 200 wants more. According to the approach that says that this happened soon, right, that the story happened soon after the time of Yehoshua, you can maybe understand a certain view of, you know, maybe they just didn't have they didn't have freedom in their own land and they needed other place to live. If you want to go with the approach that happened later on, maybe it's more of the fact that they outgrew their land and they needed or wanted more. So that's the we have these people from Dan. What do they do? Pasuk Beis. Vayishlachu b'nei Dan mimishpachtam chamisha anashim miktsosam anashim b'nei chayil mitzara u'meyashtol. They send forth from their families, from the families of Dan, five men who are men of valor, strong men. They come from places of cities of Tzara and Eshtol, and they went liragel esaaretz to spy, to the Mitzvah Sion says to right liragel was from like the word miraglim, but also it means lechapes, to search. You know, spying has a certain negative connotation. So I think the reason why is because basically they're looking for land that they can conquer easily. And so you would use the word liragel because they're not just going to look, right? When the Bnei Yisrael are tasked, you know, however you understand it, whether it was their idea or Hashem's idea, to go into Eretz Yisrael, it's not in the negative. It's latur, it's lasur atar, to just see the land. To see the land because in the end, unfortunately, it was a negative journey. But there was a way to view it as being positive. When Moshe Rabbeinu tells them to go, it could be seen as being positive. But here it's l'ragel because it's negative. Ulechokra, to kind of discern it, you need to try to figure out where, right, to do a chakira. Chakira is it like an investigation. I have it as investigate it. No, what is the word ulechokra? Laragel esaaretz ulechokra. What do you have as the translation?
To search, it's like to investigate, right?
To investigate. But no, but it translates l'ragel and l'chokra as the same?
No, l'ragel is to spy.
To spy, okay, do it.
Uh-huh. Is to search.
So to spy and to search. But even search is like a little, like you want to, I feel like you want to say more like investigate. It's more thorough. Vayomer aleihem l'chu chikru es haaretz. Go and investigate the land. That's their instructions. I mean, they're looking for land where they could expand to. Vayavo Har Ephraim, they came to Har Ephraim, Ad Beis Micha, until the house of Micha, Vayalinu Sham, and they spent the night there. They spent the night there at the house of Micha, which again sounds like we have now two stories back to back of travelers who find themselves at the house of Micha. It's not their destination. Their destination, they're actually destinationless, Both the boy from Levi was wandering, and these men from Dan are also wandering. But when you're wandering, you have to stay somewhere. And so at least one of the places that they stayed is the Beis Micha, because it sounds like in addition to being a house of Avodah Zarah, it's also a place for people to stay. Given Micha's total personality, doubtful that it's pure chesed. It's probably some type of hostel, some type of inn, right? And then this package deal that there's an Avodah Zarah there. Vayilinu Sham, so they stay there. Pasuk Gimel. Hema im Beis Micha. They were there in the house of Micha. When they were there in the house of Micha, the Hema hikiru es kol hanar halevi. And they recognized the voice of the nar, the Levi. It's a very interesting phrase to say that they recognized his voice. And therefore, vayasuru sham, they kind of we'll come back to that thought in a second. They turned there. Vayomru lo, they turned there, meaning they turned to him. They found him. And they said to him, Mi haviyacha halom? Who brought you here? Umata osebaze, what are you doing here? Umalachafo, what is there for you here? They recognized that he was kind of not where he's supposed to be. And the question is, when the Navi says the Hema Hikiru, they recognize him. So how much do they recognize him? Do they actually know his voice? It seems wild that they live in Dan. He lived in Beis Lechem Yehuda. He's a Nar, so he's not that old. He comes and starts being in the house of Micha, and they recognize him. So one approach is to say that, like we said before, he was not your typical Levi in the sense that he had some prominence given his genealogy. And so, yeah, people actually knew who he was. The other way to explain is maybe Vehema Hikiru es kol hanar, they heard his voice. It's not that they recognized him as being an individual. They recognized him as being the one who serves in this Beis Avodah Zarah. They heard that someone was served, right? However, whatever chanting he was doing in his Avodah Zarah worship, again, whether he believed it or whether he just puts on the act, they heard it, they recognized it, and they're drawn to it. They turn to him and say, like, what are you doing here, basically? Who are you? Pasuk Dalet, Vayomar Aleim, he says to them, Kazo v'chazeh asali Micha. Like this and like this, Micha did for me. Vayiskireni, and he hired me. He hired me. Vel ve'ehi lo l'kohen, and I am a kohen for him. So that's who I am. I work. Basically, what am I doing here? And maybe you'd say it's just, it could be innocent, right? You're staying in this inn. You're staying at this place on the side of the road, and you hear a commotion. You hear another voice, and so it's natural to say, like, who are you? Who are you? Like, we're both happen to be here. He says, well, I'm not visiting. I'm actually here, and I'm a priest. So you almost say to some degree it's a positive. Vayomer pasake vayomer lo. So they say to him, Sha'alna velokim. And this is actually debated amongst the mafarshim. Did they mean to say Hashem? Did they mean to say the god of the idol? And there are different opinions. But they're basically saying ask of God. So whether it's capital G or lowercase g, obviously big difference. But still, there's something to be said of the fact that they're searching for some spirituality. It could be a negative search, because if they are meaning Avodah Zarah, and even if you would say, huge parentheses, that they're asking from Hashem, but they're asking for him to go via the means of Avodah Zarah through the idol, meaning there is the idea of asking advice. You could ask advice of you could ask advice of the Urim Mitumim. You could ask advice of the Kohen Gadol, and you kind of get a response. And almost their question is similar. It's a similar question that the Melech would take to the Kohen Gadol. Will we be Matzliach in this mission? should we go on this mission or not? That's an appropriate question for a melech to ask the Kohen Gadol, to use the Urim V'Tumim to kind of communicate with Hashem. So the general idea of communicating with the divine, that's good and important. The problem is the way that they choose to go about doing it. Either straight, it's Avodah Zarah, or B, even this, you know, kind of backwards route, which is still Avodah Zarah, to know what Hashem wants, but to know it through means that are not appropriate. Then what do they want to know? Sha'al nav Elohim, v'neida'a ha-tzatzliach darkenu. That we should know, are we going to have success in our journey? Asher anachnu holchem aleh, that we are going on. Now, there are multiple levels of their request for success. Because their level of success is, number one, to find the place that will be good for them to expand their borders, expand where Dan could live. And then perhaps as a second level of, well, once we find the place, we need to have success in terms of actually conquering it. So will we have success? Pasuk Vav, Vayomer Lahem, he says back to them, HaKohen, the Kohen, the Levi, he says, L'chu l'shalom, go to peace, go in peace. Nochach Hashem, darkechem asher telchu ba. The path that you're going, the journey that you're going, is nochach pnei Hashem. Right, lahavdol. It's in the presence of Hashem. In the presence of Hashem means it's blessed by Hashem. That you right. Nochach means negative. It means opposite. Also, it Rashi says it's used in a phrase of like Hashem's presence is revealed. It's now. We have to. The best argument that you can make is that he's making this up, meaning there's no way that Hashem is giving him that answer, and that you know that he's making it up. It is interesting to note that when he makes it up, he uses the name Yudke Vavke. He's still using the name of Hashem, which almost you know it calls us into question. He may still not believe in what he's doing. Now, does that make him better or not better? I don't know. Meaning the fact that he doesn't believe in the Avodah Zarah, but he's still willing to work at the house of Avodah Zarah, you can probably make the argument that maybe he's even worse because the person who worships Avodah Zarah and doesn't know any better, you know, they've been so taken by their desire for Avodah Zarah. Okay, so they've been taken. Here, if he's still speaking of Hashem, it means he hasn't bought in on the Avodah Zarah. But yet he's still investing his whole life in working for the Avodah Zarah. He knows better. He's not the you know the we use an expression in America a lot, a tinok shenishba. Tinok shenishba is literally it's a child who's been taken captive. Right? You have certain people who they know nothing about their Jewish faith. They know nothing about anything. How could any of us have a claim, or how could Hashem have a claim on such a person? But someone who knows better, okay, it's not for us to have any claims on anyone. But perhaps Hashem, in His infinite wisdom, you know, has a claim against someone who should know better. Micha most likely should have known better as well. You know, the question becomes, you know, how is it that a Micha can come onto the scene? How is it that developed? And again, this story, so far, nothing about this story is so monumental, consequential on a national level, right? So you're maybe thinking to yourself, like why are we being told this story? It doesn't involve... And it's not going to involve a national war. It's going to involve like a little scuffle between these people from Dan and Micha. But is that national news? Is that significant? So the answer is yes, it is significant because Shmuel HaNavi writes it. The question for us to ponder is why is it significant? And that, you know, how could it be that Micha establishes for himself an Avodah Zarah? How could it be that these people from Shevet Dan, who... There's no reason for us to assume that Shevet Dan is any different than any other Shevet. How could it be that they're buying into a message that's coming out of a base Avodah Zarah? And how is it that they're interested, right? Why didn't they travel, right? They want to ask advice. They want to ask advice of Hashem. So why don't they go a little further in the land of Ephraim? There's a place called Shiloh. And there's a city called Shiloh. And there's the Kohen Gadol in Shiloh. And you ask questions about, you know, will I have Hatzlacha on my journey? And you get an answer. Yes? No? And you go with it. Here, they're coming to this. Now, they didn't search out the base of Avodah Zarah. It's important to note that. They didn't. It wasn't like they were looking for it, but when they found it, they're willing to buy into it. They're willing to respect it. They're willing to follow it. And at the same time, we keep pointing out that the Levi who's working, he has not bought in necessarily. And the truth is that when we finish the story, in terms of the Levi, it could be he never bought in. But he's willing to kind of put on, you know, he's willing to hang that shingle of being a sham in order to make a buck. In order to, again, you know, where is the financial incentive? So we're not exactly seeing it here, but there's some, you know, there is an understanding in Tanakh that when you seek out advice in a religious way, that there's some level of small compensation, right? The story that we have, again, Lahavdil, because this is a negative story, but the story when Shaul is not king yet, and his father sent him out looking for donkeys, and they couldn't find the donkeys. He's with his lad, they couldn't find anything, and they said, they recognized that they were near the place where Shmuel lived, so they figured, let's go ask Shmuel. And the first response, kind of among themselves, it sounds like they put their hands in their pockets. They realize they have no money. They have no money. How did they go get the religious advice? It sounds like there was some level of, you know, when you go, you give a token of your you give a token of your appreciation, right? Lahavdil, you know, like when you go to a rebbe, you give a little bit to the maisa, to the tzedakah organization that the rebbe runs. Do you have to? You don't have to, but like that's what's done. So you know, presumably that's what exists in the house of the avodah zarah. Because if not, why would Micha pay him? Why would Micha pay him to just serve there? It must mean that there's some type of system where maybe he gets a cut, Micha gets a cut, Micha gets everything, he just gets the 10 portions of silver. And so the, you know, when they give the answer, and it also makes sense why you want to give positive answers, right? If this is a sham, and why do you want to give positive answers? People are happier when they get positive answers. And maybe they, now, obviously you can come back to bite you, if it doesn't work out their way, but they're probably more likely to come back if you give them positive answers than if you give them negative answers. So,
the Navi Shekhar, people kept listening to them because they said what they wanted to hear.
Right. Yeah. In terms of when you say what you want the people to hear, and then people like you, and that you know that increases, but it's not emes. It's nowhere close to emes. So where we need to continue, Bezram, next time is, now that they got their advice, what they do with it, and kind of not only what they do with it initially, but how taken they are by this Pesamita. So Bez Hashem, after the Tishrei holidays, we will continue.